This is Janet Levine for the National Park Service, and I'm here today in Pinellas Park, Florida, with Maria
Francis.
Maria Francis Cacciapaglia Torino. Mrs. Torino came on the Caserta, that was the name of the ship, and came from Italy through Ellis Island in 1916 when she was 8 years old. Today's April 17th, 1993, and I just want to say that I'm very happy to be here. Let's start by you saying your birth date.
My birthday is August 4th, 1908. But the little story behind this, my birthday, generally I celebrate on July 25th.
Well, why is that?
Because when I came to this country, my mother brought me to school, 27th Street Public School, and they brought me to first grade. And the teacher asked me what was my birthday. And I said, in Italy, they don't go by your name years ago, by your birthday date. They just go by your name. That's the day you were born, and they give you your name, and you go by that. Well, so I said to my mother, what was my birthday? She says, I don't remember. I said, you don't remember my name? Weren't you there? She said, of course I was there as well. I said, she said, I don't remember what your name was. All I know was, but summertime, and it was in the morning, early morning. She said, and I said, well, she said, give me a date, the teacher said. My mother said, July 25th. So I was going by that date all my life till I was about 56 years old. And everybody knew me by Francis, because when I was born, my mother wanted my name to be after her mother, Marie, and my father wanted to be named Francis like his mother. So when they brought me to church, I happened to be a Catholic one. They brought me to church and the priest said, that's no problem. They're born to be baptized. And he said, well, we'll call her Marie Francis. My father said, wait, she must be called Francis. Always. Well, all my life I knew my grandmother that called me Francis. In Italian, it's called Francesca. And so, when I came, well, anyway, so I went to school in Europe till to the second grade. And I went to church religiously with my grandmother. She'd wake me up 5:30 in the morning to take me to church. And I said, but Grandma, it's so cold. And we lived in the southern part of Italy, which wasn't too cold. Maybe our winters weren't severe. It's similar to the temperature I have here in Florida. Well, so I grew up, I was 8 years old, and then my father was here in America since, and I knew my father very little because he only came to Europe once to visit. And so my mother said, this is your father. I said, my father, I don't know him. She said, he's your father. He always said that the children used to say to you that you don't have a father. You have a father. Here's your father. Well, my father gave, my mother said, my father was very generous, very nice man, and he would give all the children money, nickels and whatever, because he was a visitor. And I was kind of shy, and I was in the corner, and didn't even know who I was. So my mother said, did you see your father? I said, did he give you money? He didn't give me nothing. She said to my father, she said, did you give this to Francis, your little daughter? Didn't you give her anything? He says, I didn't know who she was, which one was. She didn't come to me. So I felt bad. I said, he says, that's okay. So he hugged me around and he kissed me. He said, I'm sorry. He said, I'll give you more. So he gave me a dollar bill. To me, it was just paper. I didn't think anything of it. Well, anyway, from then on, he visited us, I think, for a few weeks, and I became very accustomed to him. And he wanted to hug me around. I said, I wouldn't dare let anybody touch me because I was taught that way. My grandmother said, don't let any man touch you. Don't let anybody hold him. So my mother said, so they had property about 3 miles out of town, which I used to walk with my mother during the summer.
Who had the property?
My parents. Uh-huh. My mother ran about by my husband. My father was here. So she had a brother, and they used to raise, they had grapefruit, they had, not grapefruits, they had walnuts and almond trees, and then they used to also raise, on another piece of property, they used to raise wheat. And so my mother said, let's go to the farm, because they wanted to see how the farm. My mother used to go early in the morning. That's why my grandmother took care of me during the day, because my mother used to go to work, and she had her brother help her with the property. And that was their living. You know, they were farmers. And so she said, I love blackberries so much. And my father said, do you want to win your daughter? So give you a kiss. I said, go get her some, let her pick some blackberries for her. So we walked along a little bit, and I remember so distinctly, I was holding his hand, and they had some beautiful grapefruit, blackberries, and some of that size. They were so delicious. So he said, gave me quite a few, and I ate them up, and slowly he came over to me and said, you like them? I said, oh, yeah, I like them. I said, I like them very much. So I ate them all, and then finally got around me. He said, see now, he says, I like you. He says, I love you, and I want to, he said, I want you to like me. I said, but I don't know you. He said, well, you will. Well, anyway, so I finally gave him a kiss on the cheek, and oh, he must have been thrilled to heaven. Well, anyway, time went by and left, and I was crying. I said to my mother, when is he going to come back? And he was so nice. And all the children, I told him, I said, see, and I went to school, and I told the children, my friends, I said, I have a father. See, not only you, because their parents used to come home in the evening. I had, you know, stayed with my mother, and my mother used to get home at sundown, and she'd leave in the morning before I even, you know, knew about her, because she had to be on the property. Well, that was as far as I remember. And then I used to go back. Finally, one day during the summer, my mother was on the fields plowing the harvest. And so we got a letter, and I opened the letter. So since I was in the second grade, I was able slowly to read. But what struck me, it said, if you like to come to America, I will provide for you. And she said, if not, then I'll stay a couple more years and raise a few more dollars, and then I'll come back. So I was all excited. So I said to my grandmother, I said, Grandma, I said, look, a letter from Papa, a letter from Papa. She said, oh, she said, I'm going to go to see Mom and tell her. I walked myself. This property was about a mile and a half. Well, I walked there. This was between July and August. I walked in. It was going on a hill, and I'm waving to my mother. So finally, I walked down the hill where they had, it was like in the valley, and they would have the harvest. They had the horse going around, or had they harvest the wheat, you know? And there used to be a well there. And so I went to my mother, and here the horse are going, I'm so anxious to tell her, show her the letter. I wasn't worried about the horse. She said, get out of my way. She said, what are you doing here? She said, don't bother me. She said, I said, I have your letter from Papa. She took the letter and put it in her pocket. She said, go sit down there. Don't bother me. Okay. That was that. About 2 weeks later, my mother brought me to this man, which was a friend of the family, and he was a representative of the ship. My father used anything important papers, he would write them, and my mother used to go. They were very close friends. So my mother went over to 2 weeks. She said, let's go and see Mr. So-and-so, which I don't remember his name, I really don't. And she said, good morning, how are you? He said, oh, I'm fine. He said, oh, I'm just coming to your house, he said. My mother said, you did? He said, yeah. He says, because I got a notice from your husband, he's making a reservation for you to come to America. My mother says, what? He says, well, she says, I just got a letter. He says, well, I said, you must have got it before when. Well, I said, I've been busy. She's on the farm at the harvest. And he said, well, I said, you have 2 weeks' time to get ready and leave for America. There's been a cancellation. I, in turn, didn't tell my mother that I scribbled an address down on the envelope. And I said to my father, we want to come. And I said, well, I said, I have a letter here saying that you want to come. She said, but I didn't write to him. He says, well, somebody wrote. And with that beginning, my mother went home. She couldn't believe it. And she told her mother, and she had a sister, but they were very, very close. But they had three other brothers, but these two sisters were very close, my aunt, you know. And so she said, guess what? My grandmother said, what? She said, Ralph wants me to come. My father's name is Raphael. He wants us to come to America. But in 2 weeks, that there's a cancellation, and I have to give him the answer. My mother said, I'm not going. My aunt said, don't worry about it. She said, she's not going nowhere. Let her go. She'll be back. She'll go as far as Naples. She'll come back because she got cataracts in her eyes. Well, we got together. My mother started making prepared. She said, don't take anything, just a suitcase, because you have everything here. Don't take too much of anything. But of course, my mother had to take a trunk, and she had a little suit made for me, dress, clothes, you know, to go at least, you know. And sure enough, we got on this. This man came to meet us, and we came to on the train, and my mother was waving to her nephew, was a little shepherd boy. And from the window of the train, she had a pocket watch that belonged to my father. And she threw it out the window to him, and he caught it. And so it was 24 hours on the train to Naples. And they represented this gentleman with us, you know. And we stayed 24 hours overnight in a hotel. And then he said to me, you're comfortable? He said, tomorrow morning I'll be here. It's about 7:30. And he was. And we went on to this great big ship. It looked like a mountain. And I was all excited. Nothing bothered me. I just wanted to go. I just wanted to go. I said, I want to go to America. So incidentally, I had a brother, which was came to see, and I raised with him, and I remembered him. And he came to America, and when he came to visit us one time, he said, you know, someday you're going to come to America. He said, I'm going to take you on a train that goes up in the air. And I wanted to see that train that was going up in the air, which was a Ninth Avenue elevator train.
Well, now, did he go with you?
My brother?
Yeah.
I have a brother, yes. But the one I'm talking about is an older brother. But when I came with my mother and a younger brother than him, my brother was 11 and I was 8. This brother that came with me, his name is Peter. And he didn't want to come. He was busy with his friends, you know, he didn't want to bother. So my mother said, well, we have to go. And my grandmother said, look, he said, you have to go where your husband been. And you belong with your husband, and your children belong with him. My aunt says, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Let it go. Well, here we are. November 16th, we left from Naples on board this ship.
Okay, and before we talk about the voyage,
yeah.
let me ask you a few questions about
sure.
What was the town that you were coming from?
San Teramo.
Can you spell it?
S-A-N-T-E-R-A-M-O, San Teramo, in Colle, C-O-L-L-E. Colle means the collar of mountains, and this little town was set in a circle of mountains. Very, very picturesque, beautiful.
Can you tell me anything else about the town?
About the what?
The town.
The town is very pretty. And I used to go to school with a little cousin. He was the same age as I was. And we used to go to nursery school during the day. And then, what else can I say about it? We used to go to, I did a lot of walking. I walked a lot. My grandmother taught me. I walked with all over the town. And I used to visit my grandmother, live with her, actually, you know. And I used to go to buy bread or whatever we needed, you know. And I played with my friend. We used to play hopscotch. And used to play running or something like that. Play tag, you know, hide and seek, games like that, you know.
And it was... What was your grandmother's name?
Mary Angela.
And her last name?
Her name is Gatti, G-A-T-T-I.
And that was your mother's maiden name?
Right.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And was your grandfather alive?
Yes.
And what was his name?
His name is Giuseppe. Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh. A very tall, fine man, you know. He used to be, he was a coachman for wealthy people. And he was very slim, so when he used to come home, not every night, because he had to stay there, because they never knew just when they needed him, you know, he had to work there on the estate, you know. And so...
What were his duties as a coachman? What did he...
Well, he also, I think, as far as I remember, they're talking about it, you know. They do things around the estate there, I guess, a little gardening or take care of the horses that they had and go take errands and take the mistress to or the family or their children, wherever they had to go. And that's what this, every 2 weeks he would have like a weekend off and he would come home and that's when I would see him, you know. But then I didn't seem to come, but shortly after that my grandfather passed away, you know. Mm-hmm. And then my mother's father, my father's father passed away also. And then I met his mother, my mother used to take her to come and visit us. So I knew the woman I was named after, Frances, Francesca, you know. Mm-hmm. So she was pleased that they that decided to call my name Frances, and they always did call me Frances. So my grandmother that I lived with was my mother's mother, and she used to call me Francescella, which is little Frances, you know. And I was always very tiny and petite, you know. Now I can think what it was, but at that time I just went along. She used to call me Butterfly. She, oh, like a butterfly, you don't sit still, you're always on the go. So I was a very happy little girl, you know, and with my friends. And during the summertime, I would go during the day, my grandmother would walk with me and we'd go to the farm because I wanted to see where my mother was, you know. And I used to see very little of her, see. Since she came home by 4:30, 5 o'clock, and my grandmother would have the beans ready, they cook them in a crock pot, and warm water and condiments that was in the ingredients and everything, but just so delicious, you know.
What kind of a stove did she have?
What, Don?
What kind of a stove did
she have? Well, they had a great big fireplace with one great big room. And in that room, we had a great big bed where my grandmother and my mother and me slept. And my brother had like a little cot, you know. So I slept this way with my grandmother, and my mother slept this way.
So you know. You mean head to foot?
Yeah, right, yeah. So we used to warm each other's feet. Before we went to bed at night during the wintertime, my mother used to put some hot coals in a pot, and she would warm up the bed inside, you know, before I got in there, because I'm still always very cold, you know. And so it was nice and cozy. And my grandmother used to cook the beans on the fireplace, you see. They would just make a nice fire. And all the neighbors used to bring their beans also to the crock pot. And she would, you know, tend to them. And then the evening, they had I'm talking about the winter, they had a big pot, a fireplace in the middle of the room, and a nice fire going, and they had like a little place around it where we used to sit around. My mother used to be a religious woman, she was very religious, would say the rosary in the evening, and all the neighbors used to gather together about 7:30, and my mother would lead the rosary. And since I used to, all day I would fall asleep, so my mother said, she let me go. I said, one of any day you're going to fall into that fire. You don't hold your head up. I said, I'm tired. I can't keep my eyes open. I want to go to bed. So when you finish your rosary, my grandmother would take my hand and hold me tight. She said, a few more minutes. I didn't even know what they were saying. I never could remember the prayers. I just could not learn the prayers in Italian. So my grandmother took me to church because had to make my first Holy Communion, you know, and I just couldn't. So I went to church a few times, and then they said, nun, I had kneeled down on the stone floor. She said, say it. If she would say it, I'd repeat it after, but after that was it. And so she said to me, I just didn't go anymore. because she was mean, you know, and she once put my head down. She said, "You gotta learn it." I thought that was terrible. So I didn't go anymore. When the time came that they were supposed to go and find out the date and the time and the clothes they're supposed to wear and everything, so my mother brought me to church and she said, "I want to know what I have to do for my daughter to for Holy Communion." She says, "Who's your daughter?" My mother says, Francesca. She says, "I have never seen her. I don't even know who she is." She said, "What do you mean?" My mother, she's been here every day. She said, "I haven't seen her." My mother looked at me, she says, "Where have you been? Didn't you come?" I said, "No, I only came for a little while and then I didn't come no more." She said, "Why?" "I, because she hit me," I said. "She pushed my head to the ground." I said, "I was afraid." That was the truth. So my mother turned around, she said, "Well," she said, "I don't blame her." She said, "Had I did that to me, I wouldn't like it either." So that was that. I didn't make my communion. When I came here to this country, my father was had rented an apartment for us on 26th Street in New York City. And they were building a new church, so I went there. And immediately that spring, I made my communion. I learned the prayers in English. And my mother said, "Well, how come you couldn't light them in Italian?" I said, "I just couldn't light them. I said, it was too hard." And I picked up the American language immediately, you know. Mm-hmm. And I went up to the eighth grade in school. I had no problem. I made lots of nice friends. And I was happy all these years, you know.
Yeah. But, well, let's talk more about Italy first, okay?
Yeah.
Because you remember so much. It's wonderful talk about it all.
Yeah. And then, I don't know, talk about my brother was 11 years old, like I said, and he was always out with his friends, like boys do. They climb trees and whatever they do. But he was always wanting to help and do it. Make money, and he used to bring it home to my mother. And he was very good that way, you know.
What might he do to make money? What?
Run errands for people. Run errands for people to go to the store to buy something, because I was in a better section. As of today, my brother's here, lives in Brooklyn, New York, and he's 87 years old. I'm going to be 85 this August, and he's a very good, he's very well liked, but he's retired, you know. And he used to be, he's on his own. See, I have my own little home, and he does too, in Brooklyn. And so we did very, he never had children. I was married to a very fine woman. But I had five sons. And,
Well, tell me more about the town, and what did your father, when he was in Italy, what did he do for work?
Well, he worked also, working for people, wealthy people, as a gardener, and then, you know, part-time, whenever Aaron, whatever he did. But then they were able to buy little properties, see, by working for other people. And then they started to work it together. And then my mother's brother didn't have children, so he had to work. So they were a very close-knit family. And then my father had this opportunity, because when I was first born, I was very sick, and they didn't think I was going to survive. So my father used to go travel, go out of town to try to get milk for me. That agreed with me, nothing agreed with me. So they understand they had me in an incubator for about 3 months. And my mother told me this later when I was older, and she said they even went to the next town or other town to finish. I would do anything, you know, because I was the last one, and my father wanted me. He loved children, and my mother, they had 20 children between them. My mother had said it twins 3 times, and then in between that, when they had in Spanish influenza, they lost 10 children within 2 weeks. And so it happened. After that bereavement and all that, my mother became pregnant, because he was home, see? But my father came, this was way before, my father came in 1909, see? And years later, he said he was so devastated. He said, "I got to do something." So the men on a Sunday morning always would get to go to the cafe. The cafe is a place men get together, like we have a stationery store here. But they have coffee in the morning, and they get together and find if men work or they need or something like that. it's a meeting place, like, you know, and they had in the piazza, they call it, we lived in a very town, which was very convenient, where we had our little house. So we rented. My mother didn't own the house there. They just rented to a very dear friend. And so my father said, let's talk to these people. And he said to the owner, he said, you know, they were talking about something. He said, anybody wants to go to America? They call them 100 leaders, he said, and they could go. My father said, what did I hear? Boss, that's right. So they have some men going. Some people are going, men and women and children. They want to go to America and help themselves. My father said, if I had 100 leaders, he says, I would go. So the owner of the store said to my father, he said, Raffaele, you mean to say you would go? He said, sure I would. He said, you would leave your wife and children and go? I said, why not? He said, if I'm going to get bread and butter for my family, sure I would. He said, my wife, he says, and her brother could run the little farm that we have. So he says, here's 100 liters. He said, I dare you. My father took the 100 liters, and he went to the travel, this friend that he met, that he knew, and he came. And he had also about 2 weeks' time to go. He went home. They told my mother, he said, I'm tired of being here. He said, how could you leave the baby? Where am I going to get the food? My father says, you carried her for 9 months. You did well. Now, he says, you carry on. If she's going to live, she's going to live. And if she's going to die, she's going to die. He says, I can't go on living anymore like this. He says, if I can do well, he says, I'll go for a little while. It's about a year or two, and I'll come back. So my father came to America. And yes, he wasn't lazy, and he met a very good friend in the bank because people introduced him to people, you know, this representative. He said, I'm going to introduce you, he said, to this bank. And this is a very fine man, and his name was Mr. Bernardino. I don't remember his first name because he always addressed the person by their surname. And so my father came in, he went to this bank, and he introduced himself, and this man came out and said, you Raffaele Cacciavaglia? I said, yes. He said, I'm Mr. Bernardino. He says, I know you, he said, through Mr. Representative that sent you. And they became very good friends. He says, I have work. He said, well, he says, I have to work. He said, well, he said, I have work for you. He said, you can go to wealthy people. He said, you don't have to worry about food. You don't have to worry about paying rent or anything. He said, whatever they give you once a month, he said, will be yours. And you can come here, he says, and I will put in the bank for you. And if you want to send money to your family, I will take care of things for you. And so he did, and they went on that way, you know. And so my father came to America.
So was he working at an estate or something?
Yeah,
like that?
Yeah, he worked on an estate in Osley, New York, down the along the Hudson River, you know, where that is, Osley, and he worked in Osney and some other town up here. All this he did walking, unless he had a chance to get a ride, you know, with a horse or wagon, whatever. And this was years ago, you know. And so he did. And my mother went, and she was, what happened with me was that doctor came to the house. He said, I don't know what's wrong with her. I said, do what you want. So my grandmother said, well, you know what she did? One of the neighbors had a little boy, a baby boy, and she said she had so much milk. She says, I will nurse if you want. So they took a chance, and she was nursing me, this woman. My grandmother would take fava beans. You ever see the fava bean that's size of your, and she would take those and she would grind them. Whatever it was, she would shell them and grind them, you know, with the copper, very fine, yeah. You know, what the pharmacists use, into powder form. And then she would take some of this milk and mix it in there. And then she would feed it to me. And so what happened, it stayed in my stomach, and all of a sudden they see that I was starting to look better, you know. And so time went, one day my grandmother said to me, because she used to tell me a lot of stories, you know, while we had time to be together, but she had me so much. And this doctor passed by, says, he said, what are you doing to her? I said, I didn't think she was still around.
How old were you then?
Well, my grandmother told me this. I don't know. Well, it must have been a month went by, you know, until she, I knew that I was getting better, about 6 months or something like that, you know. And so I did get better.
Wow. Yeah. Can you remember any other stories that your grandmother told you?
About the people and my son, about my, I really don't. Because at that time, then I started to play and go out to be with friends in school, you know, to the mama, because she used to take me, you know, to school and with my cousin. Then when I used to learn directions. I love to travel. So I think I was very good in directions and remembering things and places. So I never got lost. I said, Grandma, you don't have to take me. I know where to go. I won't get lost. Don't worry, I won't get lost. And then, of course, she'd walk steps behind me to see if I was going the right direction, you know? And
how did people get around in the town?
Walking. Mostly walking, yeah. Mostly walking. That's where I got all my walking from. And then during the Easter time, we would go, like at this time of the year, we would go to, before Easter, we would go to the cemeteries and say prayers and see the beloved deceased and all that. And then go in the evening, we go to the church. But when you practice your religion, that was your life, that, you know, what you did. And you look forward to Sunday, you know, when they had a religious feast was going on. So my grandmother enrolled me in the different societies that they have, like a club, you know. And then when they had certain name day, they would have this services, and the children all used to walk ahead of them, you know, the procession, and they had the statue of the saint that was being honored, you know. And so one day as we got to church, so we weren't allowed to have any, you know, breakfast, you know, and we had to go. And I went, and then while I was on the altar, and all of a sudden I felt myself going over. I fainted because I was hungry, I didn't eat, see. So my mother was upset, and she took me out, brought me outside. She said, oh, my grandmother had a piece of bread for me. And the little boy, they gave me some holy water and blessed me. She says, what's the matter? She said, why didn't you tell me? I said, I don't know. I said, where am I? What happened to me? I didn't know, you know. And it was very festive. And then like on a Monday, the day after Easter, they always would have, everybody got all their collecting, whatever they had left over from the Easter Sunday. And we would walk about 2.5 miles outside of the town and have one great big picnic, like a fair. And it was just beautiful. I remember that so distinctly. And the children always played and had a good time. And they had all little chapels there of the different saints that the people would take care of them. They, you know, they would place them there in their honor, on honor of the family. And they would go and have service. A priest would come from their parish and would have services, and everybody would enjoy and bring the foods and whatever they had, meat or chicken and the fruit and everything, whatever. And they would have a good time a whole day long. And the children would just prance around and enjoy each other. And the boys, of course, always pick on one another, you know. And my brother was no exception because he was a very a lively young boy too, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's all I could remember of that, because like I say, time goes so fast, and I think that you start remembering these things, you know, and all of a sudden you're going. Then it didn't bother me at all in the phase that I was leaving, because I had that happy feeling that I was going, I wanted to go, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I said to my grandmother, oh, I'm going to come back. No, I'm going to come back and see you. And of course, my mother and my grandmother hugged each other between them. My mother never went back. And we came to this country. She was a very unhappy woman because she never got to go visit her parents, her family again, you know. But my mother's brother and the sister took over to take care of the property. And my father said to them, well, they said, you take care of it. He says, and you, that's your bread and butter like I was doing. And I said, you don't have to send me any money. So my mother worked, you know, and she got a job in a laundry.
In this country.
Uh-huh. And, well, she wasn't, my mother wasn't, was an outdoor woman. She didn't have any domestic way to do in the house or knitter, crochet or anything like that. She was an outside woman. She says, I'm an outdoor horse. I'm a working woman.
She
says,
really plowed the fields and harvested the
well,
fields?
Well, the brother helped, yes. Yes, my mother was the main one, told them what to do, you know. And they survived, and they still have the property at these people. My cousins, you see, and I came and I kept corresponding with my cousins. And there's one in particular, two of them, they lived in a different town. We grew up together. I was 8 and she was 10. And then they kept writing back to me. At first, my aunt used to write to me, you know. I made her daughter write, because my mother was illiterate. They couldn't read and write, neither could my father. But I think they did wonders, you know, for what they did, and raising the family, and teaching us to work, you know.
What about the influenza? When did that hit?
Before I was born, so I really don't remember. Uh-huh. I really don't know. I know, yeah. Because my father came home, he used to come home every 2 weeks and once a month. This is when he stayed in Italy, you know, and working before he came to this country. And he came home one evening and he said, and the house is clean. Generally, it would have all these beds and cots all over them, because they lived in a very, one big, huge room, you know, almost bigger than my house he put together. So it was very spacious, you know. And he came home and said, where's the children? My mother said, don't ask me, ask God. And there was no way to telephone let them know. And you just had to wait till they came home, you know. Mm-hmm. And of course, he was very upset. And then my brother came, and then I came, and that was it, you know. Then my father started to come to this country, and my mom didn't have any more children. Mm-hmm. But when she came here, then they tried. I want to get a little American baby. But it didn't work. My mother said, lost cause.
Okay, so do you remember packing to leave? Do you remember anything about saying goodbye or before you came to this country?
Yeah, well, I said goodbye to my little friend. I'd gone door to door and I hugged him and I said, see, now I'm going to see my father. He said, I don't have a father. I always emphasized it because I was so depressed about it. They used to tease me about it, you know. As I'm going to America, I said, and let me see, and saying goodbye to my grandmother and some of my other cousins, these other girls, my cousins named Rosa, which they moved to northern part of Italy, which is Vercelli. And when she became a young girl, there was no work in the town. So she was a seamstress and she was to crochet, arts and crafts. And she was a very talented woman, very, very talented. And so she went to, a friend recommended her, and they went to Vercelli, this town, and she got a job. She worked, and then she got married there, you know, met a gentleman, and then she had her children. But in the meantime, we always kept corresponding together, you know, and she would write me, and I'd say, she would love to come here to America. And my father said, well, I would want to send them for my aunt, you know. In the meantime, well, my grandmother died, and my mother, that depressed my mother. Said, you promised me that he would let me go, and I didn't see my mother, I didn't see my sister. But then at one time, the immigrants were forbidden, were closed, no more, nobody else could come. So that held them back. So in the meantime, their children grew up. When they were able to come, they said, no, it's too late now. I said, they have boyfriends, they don't want to leave their boyfriends, and they go on study, and all that, and they were never able to come. And my mother said she wasn't able to go either because money was tight, you know. Mm-hmm. And so my father was working, came back to the city. Then when we came to this country, he gave up that work with the wealthy people. And he came into town, and my brother, the older one, got my brother and father a job in the water meter works in Long Island City. And so my father worked there for a while, he said, and then my mother worked in a laundry shop. And my brother Pete used to go to school with me, you know. But he made a wagon, and he used to go and deliver things to the people. During the summertime, he would go to the docks and get ice. When the big chunks of ice used to fall off, so I used to go with him. And I would hold a wagon, and he would take the ice and bring it, and we would bring it to the neighbors. And some of the neighbors gave us, you know, money. And my mother said, don't do that. That's not righteous. You shouldn't take money. My mother always held us back from taking money from people. She do it willingly. But she just said, why should I do that for nothing? If they give me, I don't say I want 15 cents, I want 5 cents. They should give me something. And he was glad about that. He was always a go-getter, you know. And I went with him. So he... But he used to come home and give the money to my mother. He said, see, now if they didn't give me the money, he said, you work, you get paid. Now, why shouldn't I work? Then he got a job early in the morning to go and put the lights on for the street lights, you know, put the switch on. He would get up according to the time of the year. He would go like early in the morning, and then summertime would be daylight earlier, you know. So he'd go and put the switch on. And my brother was short like I am, you know, we were too small, but so were my parents. And so it happened that the way we were. But we did okay, fellas. And so that's the way time went on. And I went to school, you know, mainly. And then I got a job and I met my husband.
Well, before we get to that, let's just jump back for a minute. Tell me about the voyage.
The voyages from Naples, one morning, which is November 16th, they got on the trip. On the ship, and it was a very old one, the very old ship, and we came like a bunch of cattle. They had this, like the Navy had, you know, the beds, like in three layers,
bunk beds, uh-huh.
And they bunk beds, and they told my mother, said, don't dare take the bottom bunk bed, take the top, because if anybody gets seasick, it says you're going to get it. So we had three bunk beds like that. And, well, anyway, my brother, the ocean didn't agree with him. I was a wild one. Nothing bothered me. The whole month I'd get up in the morning and go and had to walk up on deck and get the coffee. And my mother would go get the bread. I mean, that's all you got. They didn't give you anything. And so my brother got taken sick. He wouldn't eat nothing. Whatever put down his stomach would come up again.
So you had to go and get in line and get the bread and the coffee and come back to the bunk.
Right. Uh-huh. Well, I got to tell you one story on board ship that you wouldn't believe. One morning, I was going up and I had a ponytail. My mother used to make a braid. I had nice long hair. It was beautiful. And my mother sent me up to get coffee. And this one morning, the ocean, and here this great big fish. I see his mouth, and I can see myself in there. This gentleman got a hold of my ponytail and held me back for sure that I was going over. Because they don't have, like today, they have more safety and everything. They were just one piece of board like that. He said, where is your mother? He said, she let you come out here. He said, where are you going? I said, I'm supposed to go and get the coffee. You're supposed to get the coffee. He said, you come with me. He took me by my hand, and you really saved me. You know, I never forgot that vision all my life, really and truly, till today. Because I was a goner. I said, well, I guess God wanted me to come. But it must have been a shark, because the mouth was so big. And the waves that were washing over the ship, you know. And he saved my life, that man, you know. And then he saw my mother. He came and scolded her. And on our way, what happened was we were hit. This was during the First World War. And we were hit. And the captain said to us, he said, everybody, he said, we have to balance the ship. He said, everybody go all onto the other side because the ship was this way. Everybody, he said. So he came to my mother and he said, Senora, I mean, Mrs., you know, madam. He said, if you pray, he said, if we get to save, we'll be very, very lucky, he said. You must pray because we are hit, and I don't guarantee. So my mother trade real hard. She would, like us for the village. She used to knit, make stockings, you know. She made 12 pairs of stockings. She brought a twine with her, you know. But we, on the ship, we would come, because it took us a whole month. That was a long time. They had to go around way. So finally, what I remember was my mother put me under her shawl. She had a great big shawl, you know, and she hugged me underneath. And they were, next thing I know, I woke up, we were in the cot. I said, how did I get here, you know? My mother said, don't worry, she said, we're safe. And my brother stayed downstairs in the cot. Well, we were safe. So finally we went, and this man, while I was going back a little bit, well, I was with my mother, you know, and my mother was hiding me because it was winter, let's face it, you know. And this man was going back and forth, walking on the gangplank, you know, the whole ship. He was using such foul language. It was just awful. He said, I'll never go again. I'll never go back to go again. Evidently, we had taken his wife's place on the ship, because it was a cancellation, remember? Mm-hmm. And me, my mother, my brother and I were three people. And he had his wife and two children. And his wife wouldn't come, so he came alone. He said, I'll never go back again. I made three trips, and this is the last one, he said, going back and forth, talking like his mind, and he was cursing. He said, so my mother said, well, she said, the captain said, why do you use such foul language in front of people? That's not nice, he said. He said, you don't know how I feel. And my mother said, don't mind him. He said, that's the only words he knows to pray to the Lord, let him know how he feels. She said, that's the only word. God doesn't hear the other words. He only hears the prayer. That's his prayer. And I thought that was beautiful, you know. I remember that, lots of things. And so then we were coming close to New York, and one morning the captain said, arise, he said, we have seen the Statue of Liberty. We are coming to New York. And everybody rejoiced, they were so happy. And I said to my mother, my brother wouldn't get up, I said, you know what, Mama, maybe Pete wants a piece of pizza. Pizza? She said, nothing would stay in his stomach. So she said, I don't ask him. I said, go get it. So we went up with her, and I had two pieces of pizza. They were delicious. And my mother had some, and she brought him two pieces.
Where did you get the pizza?
Well, they had them on board ship. They used to make it. Uh-huh. To the cook. We had to go to where they cook, you know. And this was during the day, like for lunch, you know. And so everybody was rejoicing. And my brother gobbled up that pizza, and he sat up. My mother said, and she would go to the, my mother had a suitcase, she had a big picture of this religious, this saint, was saint, the patron of the town, Santo Erasmo, that was the name of the saint.
And can you spell that?
Erasmo. My brother's name was Peter. But this is the name of the saint that my mother was devoted to. And she had the big picture on the back of the suitcase. She opened the suitcase, she said, Don't you sleeping? Are you sleeping like my son? Are you sleeping like his son? Pray, said, we have to get there. And so she hit the suitcase like that. She said to my brother, she said, Pete, eat. She said, eat, please. She said, you gotta see your father, but you gotta see your brother. Because my other brother was here, but my father's name was Frank. So you gonna want to see your brother? He said, yes. He said, eat. Eat, and he ate the pizza. My mother went up and got him another piece. And with that, he started to feel better, would you believe it? And we came, and the Governor's Island, you know, or the Governor's Island, all around New York Bay, it was all ice. They had, I don't know how, the ship had an anchor at 42nd Street dock. And so finally they took it, no, at Ellis Island, and then the ferry took us over across later, you know, later in the day.
Do you remember seeing the Statue of Liberty?
Oh, yes. Oh, I was so happy. Oh, yes. Yes, I certainly do. And I remember it so distinctly, and I said, thank you. thank you. Kept saying, grazie, 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 molto grazie. My mother used to say to me, say thank you to God. And I, whatever my mother said to prayer, I repeated, you know. And then, you know, 1969, I lost, 67, I lost my husband. And I was very bereaved. I just couldn't get over that, you know. Because we were just a devoted family, a devoted couple to our children. Our children were so good, the five boys that I had. And so when I went back, my cousins kept corresponding with me from Italy. They said, now, why can't you come and see us now? I said, you have no ties to hold you back. You're free. You could travel. And so the doctor took care of my husband. He said to my children, he said, why don't you let your mother go to Europe and see her friend, her relatives? I think that would help her a lot, you know, because I was just down. I felt the sky fell down on me, you know. And they did, you know. They gave me a nice surprise birthday party, and they bought a ticket for me to fly to Europe. And I went 1969. I had written to my cousin. I said to Bob, as I'm planning to come, and they were so overjoyed, and they said, please come. So that you'll be a couple of days to rest. And my son is going on vacation. He works for the newspaper, Progresso paper. He said, we don't see anything of our country either. He said, but if you come, we will travel by car down to to Italy, the East Coast, then around to the town where I was born, because she used to go and visit them, the cousins, you know. And my aunts and my mother, but my grandmother was gone. But my aunt with her two daughters and other relatives that I didn't even know I met, you know. All I remember was my aunt and my cousins, you know, the grown-up people like me. And so I said, Gene, I told my children that. I said, well, that sounds good. So then when they got me a ticket to go from July 25th to September the 30th, this was all a dream to me. I couldn't believe this would ever be, you know. And so I went, we got on, they bought me an orchid, you know. My chinole came to the airport, you know, and they seen me off. And I said, well, got to the plane. He goes, nothing. As I came with nothing, I'm going with nothing. Well, we went, and I got on the plane, and the captain says to me, he says, welcome, welcome. I said, thank you. He says, you have an orchid. Is that your sweetheart that you're going to meet? I said, no. I said, this is for my grandchildren. I said, I haven't been back to Italy yet since 1916. That's the first time that I'm going back. He said, oh, beautiful. So overnight on the plane, and you could see the sunrise come up as we left. They gave us dinner, which we left here about 9 o'clock. And they gave us dinner. Next thing you know, you see the sun was set, and then the sun is coming up. It was just beautiful. I didn't want to miss a thing. And the guest said, how could we eat so much? You know, you just had some tea, you had supper, and all of a sudden you had breakfast. So you can see, and they kept announcing to us, we were going to all the Alps mountains, and then we came into Milan, the northern part of Italy. And my cousin was there with her son and her little daughter, little granddaughter. She was 12 years old, Rosemary. And so my cousin said to me now, she said, please tell us, what are you going to wear so we can tell who you are? So my daughter-in-law made me an outfit, navy blue with boxes, something like, you know, very pretty. And she said, wave a white handkerchief. So I know what you are. I said, my daughter-in-law said to me, mother, she said, if everybody wears a white handkerchief, how would you know it's you? So we came into the airport, and then the captain said to me, you have a good time, he said. And he kissed me. He said, I hope you meet a nice man. I said, no, I'm not looking for a man. I just want to come and see my cousin, my relatives, and do everything that I would like to do to see. Well, I says, I'll see you on the way back, he said. Okay, so we went and walked on. I saw them waving a handkerchief, and I had my handkerchief. They knew who I was. They got off the plane. There's an open field in those days, you know. And they walk into the waiting room, and I'm getting online. And I said, gee, how should I know? From a distant plane, I couldn't see their faces. And I'm going by, and they're all standing on the line waiting for their people. And my cousin grabbed my hand. She says, "Francis, it's me." "Oh," I said. She said, "Don't you recognize me?" I said, "No, I didn't know it was you." And that's just, that's my son and then the granddaughter. And we went out, and then they had to go to checkout. And they said to me, "Open my suitcase." I says, "I can't open it." I says, "I'm not strong enough." And if you want to open it, you got to close it. So they said, "You can't open it." I said, "Well, what'd you come for?" I said, "Well, I came for vacation to see my children, my family, because I want to feel better." And they opened it up. They said, "Do you smoke?" I said, "Yes, I do." I said, "Well, that's why you should stop smoking." I said, "Well, maybe I will, but now I have to." But I didn't smoke. So my neighbors told me, they said, I said, "What can I bring them?" I said, "I don't know what to bring them." Well, I said, "You're going to see their husband." She said, "You better bring some pack of cigarettes, you know." So I was going to buy five. She said, "But now what, Pastor, bring five cards of cigarettes," she said. "So you're going to be there 2 months. You tell them that you smoke." So that's what I said. And I told them, I said, "See, you're a good smoker." And I bought them Camel cigarettes. And so I showed them, and of course, closed the suitcase, got outside. My cousins took the suitcase, the son, we got in the car. We're sitting there. I don't know what to say. I'm sitting in the front with her son, and my cousin sitting in the back with her granddaughter. She said, "Francis, talk to us. She said, you have so much to say." She said, "With so many years, we didn't see we grew up." And I said, "I do ask me anything you want us, and I'll tell you." I said, "I just don't know what to say. I said, this is a dream," I said, "that I can't believe would come true. I said, I'm so choked up that I can't find words what to say." She said, "Well, we're here now. We're going to have a good time." So then her son said, they call me Zia, which is aunt, you know, for respect. Actually, we really couldn't be. He would be my second cousin, see. But for respect in all the parts, they call you Zia, see, which is aunt. So he said, "You don't mind if I call you Zia?" I said, "No." I said, "I feel honored, you know." And so he said, "We're going to go home," he says, "and we're going to rest a couple of days, and then we're going to take a trip. Go over down the East Coast, past the Adriatic Sea, then around into Caltanissetta, which is a town over down below."
And how do you spell that town?
Let me think, I'll come back to it. Well, I have it. No, not Caltanissetta, and that Pulgrano, P-U-L-G-R-A-N-O, was a town that my cousin's daughter-in-law, relatives were there visiting, and we came down to, on the way down. It took us 18 hours, because it's up in the northern part, all the way down to the foot of Italy, to the hill, you know. Uh-huh. And we went to see her cousin. We stayed there overnight. They made a nice dinner. Oh, incidentally, when I came from the day that I landed, we went to my cousin's daughter's house, and they had a very big feast ready for me.
What?
They had a whole full course dinner, and the husband cooked the dinner. They had soup, and the northern part of Italy, but you know, is they raise rice, and the southern part of Italy raises mostly wheat, because in warmer climate, see. And they had, they say, rice, and they had meat, and they had all kinds of fruits and all kinds of sweets, you know, the pastries and all that. And he had set up a tape, and I didn't know this. They had the side. And after the dinner, we were talking. It was very hard for me to try. My cousin had to make all the translation to them. They wanted to know what I should say, some things in American, you know. And then I heard they put it on. They said, "Francis, listen, Marcello," her son-in-law's name is Marcello, he says, wants to say something. So I said, "Zia, aspetta, aspetta." I said, wait a minute. Because then I was all winded up, and they gave me a nice glass of wine, they're the best of the wines, and all. And I like wine, you know, I drink wine. And I said, "It wouldn't get you drunk." And they had figs, which I love so much, and I had a whole bowl of figs. And they said, "Oh, there'll be plenty more." I said, "Because now they're just coming into season. You came at the right time." I said, "Well, that's good." And so they play the tape back. And I'm listening. I said, that sounds like me. He said, well, it is you. And they applauded. This. They were so happy that, you know, I said, it was just beautiful that I spoke Italian so well. And I kept up my religion, my language, you know. Now here, I'm losing my, because I have nobody to talk to, you know. I'm just using the American language all the time, you know. But I do like to keep it up. And then, and most of my friends that I have here, they're all born here. And they don't even know how to say a word in Italian. I can't believe it. I got a neighbor down the street here. I said, Mary, how come you don't speak Italian? Well, I understand, but I don't speak it, you know. Uh-huh. And but we went down back to Italy again and around into, we stayed there overnight. And we went to up along the west coast and facing along the Mediterranean Sea. And we went to Caserta, and then we went into Naples. And then we went to Florence, and then we went to Bologna, and we stopped in Rome for a whole day. And I went to the Vatican City that they took me, and my ambition was to go and get a horse, ride in the carriage, horse and carriage, around the city of Rome, which I did. And my cousin said to me, no, she said, you'll get lost. I said, I won't get lost. That was fear for me getting lost. I said, I won't get lost. Don't worry. So I gave the man $5. He said, well, come on, everybody. He said, everybody can go. I said, well, come on. So we all got into the carriage and we went for a ride. And Rome was really beautiful and very historic. And I seen the great big